The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 261. This is going to be a remarkable episode, because typically, this week of Thanksgiving, I usually take the week off, and I decided this year, since it's been a remarkable year, unfortunately not in a good way, that I would go ahead and post a new episode, especially because one of the things my guests and I are going to discuss is the pending IndiePods United Summit, which is happening next week, November 29th through December 3rd. And so I'm having two great and talented podcasters come on. Gerald Glassford, who's the man behind the Pop Culture Cosmos and various other podcasts, and comedian and social media guru Jeff Dwoskin, is joining me on episode 261, and we're going to talk all about podcasting, how these two gentlemen got into podcasting, what are their future aspirations for their various projects, and we talk about a bunch of different stuff too. I mean, we talk wrestling, sports, comedy, just a bunch of different topics, so it's certainly going to be a great one for this week. And so, since it is a longer episode, I'm going to get right to my first quick sponsor shout-out, so to speak. And then we're going to get into my conversations with Jeff and Gerald. Of course, I need to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And if you're a comic book fan, they got everything you need to feed that fandom. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, thousands and thousands of back issues, toys, posters. Basically, they got you covered, man. So stop on over to the store, or if you're not in the Central Ohio area, you can easily find them online. WGComics.com is their website, and they're even on Facebook. Just look for at WG Comics. And no matter how you interact with them, in person or digitally, please let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, right here on the PVD Cast. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with podcasters Gerald Glassford and Jeff Dwoskin. All right, ladies and gentlemen, joining me this evening for this episode is a man that's a fellow podcaster and a man that curates all kinds of wonderful geek news. Joining me here, Gerald Glassford. Gerald, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, and I hope all your listeners and viewers out there are also doing well. I want everybody to stay safe, and I know 2020 year hasn't been exactly the year everybody planned out to be, but I'm hoping everybody will have a great closeout to their year ahead.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I was gonna say, before we start talking about the pop culture cosmos, how are things in your neck of the woods? You're out in Las Vegas, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
How are things in terms of your situation with this pandemic and whatnot?
Well, like a lot of people, just day by day, you're worried about lockdowns, you're worried about the virus itself, you're worrying about all the things that are going on. I have a wife that works as a nurse, so I worry about her situation every single day that she goes to work. And then obviously here at home, I have two great kids here, that are just trying to go and do the best they can on the virtual learning scene and trying to do what they can as far as students concerned. I've been so proud of them because they've been very strong for our family as a good backbone. And then I have an awesome son who's a dentist in the Texas area. So I'm worried about him because, you hear all the – there is no, safe spot right now. And that's the scary part, where everywhere you go and everywhere you turn, the coronavirus numbers are climbing. I even talked to Shannon Wilson the other day, and our conversation quickly turned to how her, as an actress who's working on a Netflix project right now, everything is centered around safety and all the concerns that the entertainment industry has with coronavirus right now. So it's crazy, man. It's crazy. I'm rooting for you and your family and everyone out there to go ahead and just be as safe as possible under these trying circumstances.
You touched on something that I just said the other day. Unfortunately, I had a coworker that got it and had a real bad case of it. Thankfully, he survived, but he's dealing with some lingering effects. And I think that's the other thing that makes it so darn concerning, is that you may get it and yeah, you may survive. And the survival rate is whatever they said, you know, that 99% or whatever, but we don't know what's going to happen in a few weeks, a few months, a few years after having this. What if it damages something that's, you know, very important, your heart, your brain, something like that. And I think that's the other scary part.
We're finding out things every single day about it. And unfortunately, none of it is good. And like you said, there are lingering effects with a lot of it. You mentioned the heart, the brain. You know, there are other parts of the body that get adversely affected, because this virus, when it attacks you hard. And I mean, you see people have lung transplants. You hear the horror stories all over the place regarding this. It's some scary stuff, and it's something that I certainly don't want to get. And I'm trying to do everything I can to protect my family as best as possible.
I agree with what Gerald said. Stay safe out there, folks. And you know what? Let's get on to some more positive news. All right. Let's talk about the pop culture cosmos, which is described as a look into pretty much everything pop culture: TV, movies, comics, science fiction, video games, collectibles, board games, card games.
Yeah, pro wrestling. We try to cover it all. When something is topical, we try to take a look at it, because we basically cover the latest news and trends in pop culture every Monday and Friday. Our new shows drop on the podcast channels, and then we're also on 35 different radio stations around the world. So we got to, you know, when something drops, like let's say a Marvel news happens, you know, so we talk about that right away. Let's say something happens with the WWE, you know, or AEW or something like that. We'll talk about that. Or video games. You know, last week was the most important week ever for the video game industry, with not only one but two console releases within 2 days of each other. And both are having big successes right now. And if you can find one that's not on eBay for $1,000, good luck right now, because you're going to need it. But yes, I mean, we talk about it all, the streaming industry, how it's grown by leaps and bounds even before COVID. And now with COVID basically destroying right now what we see out of the box office industry for theaters, the streaming industry has become more important than ever. So we try to cover the latest news and topics that are really on the touch. A lot of stuff that you might be talking about around the water cooler, we go ahead and try and bring up on each and every program.
So let's say real quickly, you have a very busy week where multiple things happen. Like, how do you and the crew at Pop Culture Cosmos, how do you figure out what to cover, what to organize? What do you want to spend a lot of time on? What do you just want to touch base on? Like, how do you set up your show?
Absolutely. That's a great question. First off, I go ahead. Do I have any interviews? So if I have any pre-recorded interviews, I know I allot maybe 10 to 20 minutes for that interview. So with the time I have left in the show to cover 30 to 40 minutes, I get with the person who's going to be hosting with me, whether it's Marcus De La Garza for our Friday show, the PCC Multiverse, Josh Peterson on the Monday show, which is the Pop Culture Cosmos, or let's say somebody's subbing in for them because life happens and whatnot. I go ahead and we get feedback. We talk to each other. We go ahead, how do we want to line this up? Obviously, there's usually a big story, whether it's dropping. Like last week, it was predominantly the first story. The main story you have to cover is the video game console launch. But let's say there's something happening on Disney Plus or Netflix. That's going to drop first. You make sure you lot that the most time. And that's going to be something we talk about first and foremost at the beginning of the show, the most important story that's out there. We cover at least a good 10 to 15 minutes on that. And then the rest of the time is filled up with the other stories that are out there, Like, let's say there's something that's going on in the world of streaming. Let's say there's maybe some board games, news out there. Let's say there's something in the entertainment world you want to talk about. We go ahead and we touch on the rest of the half hour for that, as far as the first half hour is concerned, with the latest news and updates on that. Again, if there's an interview, we'll have that on the back half of the program most of the time. And then after that, you're just usually, again, about 10 to 20 minutes for the interview. Right after that, the last 10 to 15 minutes of the show, we dedicate to either another story that popped up if it's a really heavy week, or we go ahead and we'll just top it off with some nice, a little bit outside the realm of what you would normally talk about. Like, for instance, on the end, we've talked about the McRib coming back, or maybe some cooking ideas, or some really something like maybe what's trending in video games. What about us? I know I got in one of my recent episodes, I got on the worst British accent I could in order to talk about The Crown season 4. We talked about that to close out the show, and also The Queen's Gambit. That's also on Netflix. Why are those shows doing so well? So we try to go ahead and have a fun story on the back end of the show. Maybe we're talking about Arcade 1UP because they're doing a lot more to expand their company outside of what they have been doing for the past couple of years. So they're doing a lot of good things. So we talked about that as well. Yeah, you'll usually find that on the back end of the show, something a little bit more lighter per se for the back end of the program.
So what was the catalyst for starting Pop Culture Cosmos?
That's a great question right there for you. 2009, I've been podcasting since, and I was doing a show, video game centric. It was Game Source Podcast. And we did that for about 7 years off and on. And we did about 150 episodes there. And it was really a great time. Had a lot of people writing as far as for us on yourgamesource.com, a site that we used to run. We had a lot of interest in it. But at the tail end, I decided I wanted to go ahead and pursue a journalism degree. So I decided to go ahead and go back to school to National University. Went the virtual training route and met up with this guy named Josh Peterson, who also has a great affinity for video games. So he hopped on the latter stages of the Game Source podcast, and we found ourselves not only talking about video games, but we found ourselves talking about a lot of pop culture stuff, some movies, some of this, some of that, some of the things outside the video game realm. And I said to him, man, I really enjoy talking not just about video games, but all the gamut of pop culture. Why don't we, get together on a regular basis and a weekly basis and start talking about this and start covering, the latest stuff that's going on? Because you and I end up seemingly talking about it, whether we're in class or not. So don't tell that to our teachers. It just basically we decided, let's go ahead and reformat this where we can not only just talk about a whole things that are going on in the video game industry, but just outside of that, and round it off into a world where you can go ahead and talk about all things pop culture. Because the Game Source podcast was great for us, and it had a lot of listeners and things of that nature, but it was something where you always felt confined just because it dealt strictly with video games. So we wanted to go ahead and broaden our reach. So that's how, a good friend of ours, director Rob McCallum, he had someone who we had interacted with. And by the way, check out all the great work that he's doing with not only his documentary Nintendo Quest, but his stuff that he's got coming up with Action Figure Adventure and Box Art. He came up with the name for us, Pop Culture Cosmos, as a great way to go ahead and get that going. I wanted to go ahead and market it out to radio stations, so I thought that would be a better approach than just having the podcast format. So it all seemed to click together as far as that's concerned, and so far it's worked out pretty good.
No, that's cool. That's absolutely cool. So in the realm of the pop culture cosmos, you have blogs and reviews and various different podcasts all at your website, which again is?
Popculturecosmos.com.
Okay, I knew that. I just wanted to pitch it to you.
Oh, no worries. Good, good. I appreciate you doing it. And also, it's not just the pop culture cosmos that's there. I also do other shows. And Josh, the main guy that has done this with me over the years, he also has his other shows as well that I touch on as far as I like a lot of stuff that's going on in the sports realm. So I do a fantasy football show on the side. I also do an NBA show that is Los Angeles Lakers centric, but also NBA centric. You know, we deal a lot of stuff there. That's been a big hit for us in the Lakers fast break. So it you know, it's all draped under this realm of pop culture, which we do. And again, it's just been so rewarding when you can take your, you know, I just see pop culture as this escape, you know, and we've needed pop culture now more than ever because of all the stuff that's been going on. I'm telling you right now, it's been a lot of fun in doing this. And it's always a great time to talk about pop culture because, again, as a way, as an escape, there's nothing better we can do.
I'm going to ask you real quick, since you brought up that you do dabble in sports. How has the Raiders been embraced by the city of Las Vegas? Because I know, like, the city of Vegas, when the Golden Knights came, you know, it seemed like they just took them in, and they're one of their own, even though they were a new team. How's it going for the Raiders?
Well, I will tell you a funny story with Vegas. People think that we embraced it and we were just all into a hockey team. The thing is, when they first asked for season ticket holders, the thing is, the NHL required that they get to 10,000 seats as far as commitments. Mm-hmm. It took a long time for people to embrace hockey during that summer before they came out to get the tickets. So people weren't really into it as yet. They did a lot of promotion around the city that really helped. But it wasn't until they realized that this team and this organization was a winner, because I don't know, for hockey fans out there, they went to the NHL finals in their first year, which had been unheard of for any organization. Around that first year, about 3 months in, people realized we had something special, and then it caught like a wildfire, and it just exploded as far as into the city, and to the point where now it's one, well, actually when COVID subsides and people are able to go back in arenas once again, it's one of these most expensive tickets right now in the NHL, and packed capacity every single game, and it's experienced like none other for the NHL. With the Raiders, I know they got a lot of pushback because of the stadium, and that was an issue, I know, as far as how much the city had to go ahead and pay out. So I know that wasn't exactly as much beloved. And there's always a kind of trepidation when it comes to the Raiders, because you say, okay, how long are they actually going to stay here? Because, you know, the folks in Oakland and Los Angeles understand exactly how long, you know, they've had to deal with, you know, okay, they're here one day and they're gone the next. But with the Oakland Raiders, there's been some outpouring of goodwill for them. They are appreciated. I know that the media and the local networks here in town have really, truly embraced it, maybe a little bit more so than the fans. But that stadium, even though it wasn't the most beloved thing in the world, and I surely didn't like paying the bill for it, or at least putting it on the people that are coming in as far as the tourists is concerned, because tourism, you know, is such a big part of the industry for Las Vegas. It is a beautiful and gorgeous stadium. I cannot tell you enough how the Death Star, as they call it, is really something that special here as far as the way it looks. But it's been something that people are really coming around on. But I don't see it as – I still see them as a number two here. Amazingly enough, I still see them as a number two here to the kind of reception once the Golden Knights really got off on a good foot. I mean, the Golden Knights are clearly the number one in this town, but the Raiders, they have their imprint, and I see it. As long as their team performs well in this town, I think it'll just get better and better.
Well, I'm going to go to the NBA for a minute because I see all your Lakers jerseys behind you.
Yes.
Do you have an all-time favorite Laker?
For me, I know he's up there, obviously, but for me, I think it would probably be it's between Shaq and Kobe for me, because I just enjoyed watching the play. I'd probably have to say Shaq if you put it to me, but Kobe is right there at number two for me. Both were tremendous gifts for us as Lakers fans to go ahead and see them play. I know it didn't end well, but for 3 years, seeing them out on top, it was just truly something special to see.
Okay. I was a kid that grew up watching Magic Johnson and Kareem and James Worthy and Michael Cooper. And
As was I.
Yeah, the Showtime years, you know?
Yes.
Exciting basketball.
I remember seeing the Lakers since the late 70s and on KCAL Channel 9 here in Los Angeles. And funny because, at that time, like you said, once Magic Johnson came and he rocked the Los Angeles the way he did and became such a part of the LA life. And the five championships that they won during the 80s and how great those battles were against the Celtics. I have immense memories of those championships as well. It was just, those battles were very cataclysmic and just truly awesome to see.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, let's talk a little bit about something that's coming up here at the end of the month. That would be the Indie Pods United Summit, and you are a part of it. So yes. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about this summit?
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're a fan of podcasting, if you're a podcaster, or if you've ever asked yourself, I would really love to get the opportunity to go ahead and start my own podcast, there is no better place to go, as you know, later this mm-hmm. month from November 29th to December 3rd than Indie Pods United. I know I'm going to be not only having our podcast, the Pop Culture Cosmos, be a part of the event on the 29th at 12 Eastern. I think our time slot is for now. I'm hopefully subject to change and without, hopefully not without notice. So that'd be bad if it did. But right now it's going to be 12 Eastern right there, high noon on 11/29. And then I'll also be doing with a lot of other great people. I just got confirmed today that are going to be part of this as far as two workshops I'm a part of. One is going to be tips and tricks, and I believe that's on the first. And then on the second, I will be conducting a workshop for beginners. So if you really have never got into it, but you really want to know how and just a couple good steps to get you started, there's been an hour allotted to me for that. And I cannot thank enough Tina Marie Trimpert of the Psychedelic Podcast, who is heading this all up. And if everybody wants to know more information on it, it is $10 right now. I think it's going up here in about a few days or so, about 5 days. The price is going up. But right now it's $10. That's $2 a day. I know there's what, going to be about 40 to 50 podcasts from what I was seeing that are going to be doing their wares. There's music, there's entertainers, there's comedians. They're all going to be part of it. They're all going to have their own sessions. It's going to be a great time. Yes, some of it will be free, but you want to go ahead and check out all the stuff that's also paid for as well. And again, $10 is going to get you in. And I truly recommend you going ahead and giving a shot. If you have any, you know, if you're interested and you want to have any interest into it, go ahead and check out IndiePodsUnited.com. Again, I think it's going to be a worthwhile cause. And it's going to all these, the work into it is just into this thing is just going to be so amazing. It's so far, it's been very fun. I know Tina Marie has been working really hard on it. I know I've been helping out behind the scenes, but there's been a great crew that's been giving her hand. As we speak, they're talking about it right now. They're having more and more meetings as we speak. So they're working hard on it for you out there. I know I'm also heading up the awards. So myself and five other judges came up with 50 different independent podcasts that we're going to be looking at and testing and listening out. And we're going to bring it down to an IPU, we're calling it the Indie Pods United Top 25. So basically, instead of just saying, okay, this category, this category, this category, and it being a popular vote on this, like you see us those some of those other awards, we're judging 50 shows, breaking it down to 25, and we're going to honor 25 shows at the event as well. And if you want to go ahead and you have a favorite show in mind, we also have a poll right now going on the Indie Pods United Facebook group that you can be a part of. Join it and go ahead and vote in the poll. There's actually 45 different podcasts there that you can choose, and the winner of that will also be honored as well.
Gerald, if you could get one dream guest to appear on one of your shows, who would it be?
It's a good question. I think a relative of my wife's would probably be best, because he's a YouTuber, as far as it's concerned, that has over 8 million subscribers currently. So if I could get him on the air, I could if I want to. I just, and I really nagged him enough or really reached out to him enough. But I'm saving that one for a special time. So hopefully, I will be able to go ahead and get them on when I'm looking forward to. But reason why is obviously not only him, because he's a great kid and I had a chance to meet him and do a lot of, basically, if you're familiar with the channel Domix on YouTube, you'll understand he's a good kid, Dominic. And I had a great time when he was here in Las Vegas a few years ago. Talked to him a couple times, over the course of that time. And I would really like to go ahead and get a chance to sit him down as far as and pick his brain on his success with YouTube and Not only that, obviously, I had some fun talking pop culture with him as well. I'd probably say him just because of the fact that he's family, and it'd be good to talk to him. And then, of course, the small fact that he's so well renowned and he's had achieved such success, that would be just great to give him a chance to go ahead and discuss that on our show. So I'm thinking about going ahead and reaching out to him at some point, but I don't want to disturb him. You know, when you're that high up on the food chain with YouTube, you know, everybody wants to go ahead and vie for your attention. So I may really reach out to it. I may use the family connections. You never know.
Have you had a favorite episode that you've done?
Well, that's a good question as well. I think for me, from a personal standpoint on the pop culture cosmos, it was a while back. It was the episode right after the Las Vegas shootings here. That was at the Mandalay Bay. For us, for me, it was very emotional for the entire city. We were all trying to pull together. And I had a monologue I did at the beginning of the show that I think it's some of the best things I've done. Best thing I was talking about at that point in time. It's a show, like I said, several years old now. It's actually in our first year or two of doing the pop culture cosmos. That I think is probably the best overall episode because of the fact it had a lot of great content, but it was basically something that I did at the beginning that from the heart that really meant so much to me. For the Lakers fast break, I did a great episode that I did as far as the first part of a three-part series that I'm doing, which was really good. Worked out some of the great conversations I had in the earlier part of the Lakers championship season. So you can look for that. Came out a couple of weeks ago, but I think my conversations with Rafael Barlow on the certain incidents and events and how we can try and come together better as a community and the racial divide that we have and all the problems with law enforcement and not being able to go ahead and have that connection with the community. We talked about that in great detail on the Lakers fast break during the summer, and those were some really powerful conversations, really emotional at that point in time. So I think that was really good for myself as well. A lot of it's so nice sometimes when you have that outlet to talk and share your feelings because it does help, you know, to pass these troubling times.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I have to ask this. While doing some research, I stumbled across Nacho Daddy. I gotta ask, what the heck, man? What is Nacho Daddy all about?
About 10 years ago, when my kids were wee high, back in the days when they were in kindergarten and whatnot, I have a Lucha Libre mask. In fact, actually, Nacho Daddy can live right here. I just pulled it off my Uncharted 3 right here. So this is the mask right here.
That's the great Sasuke, isn't it?
Yes. Great Sasuke, yep. You're right, Sasuke. For those in Japan, that would yes, as far as New Japan and things of that nature. So yes, that is the great Sasuke. I got this at an E3 a long time ago when this independent developer was making a Lucha Libre and also I think it was a Lucha Libre oriented video game as far as wrestling video game. So anyways, I wore this to my daughters, one of my daughters, my youngest, kindergarten class, and I got to read to them, a Halloween story at that time, and they were just so entranced by this big, tall guy in a mask. I just remember, I see their faces like it was just yesterday, and it was just to see them all just gathered around, looking at me, and just paying attention to what I was saying, and on every word I was saying. It was special. It's really cool, you know, when you do that and with such a great crowd right there, and it's different. It's kind of appreciation that you get, and it was really a cool moment in my life. And my daughter doesn't even remember it now. I mean, because the picture came up on Facebook the other day, and I shared it, which you saw, and you saw also as well. I was Nacho Daddy again for that Halloween. It's something that, again, it was just something cute I did at that point in time. But yes, the great Sasuke, I cannot thank enough for this mask or the design of the mask that, again, they were giving out at that E3. But yes, I've held it fondly ever since. So you never know when the return of the Nacho Daddy may come.
Okay. Well, can we talk a little bit about wrestling? You mentioned that you you cover it for the Pop Culture Cosmos. Mm-hmm. Who are some of your favorites that you enjoy watching in the ring?
Well, I would probably say, and you asked me this the other day, you asked me this, excuse me, a little while ago about who would mm-hmm. I pick as far as an interview is concerned. And I'd say one of my top five would probably be Mick Foley. He is my favorite wrestler ever since I saw him back on an AWA taping when he was working with Memphis Wrestling long, long mm-hmm. time ago. And actually, I probably saw him when he was jobbing for the WWE. I just didn't, you know, I've seen it since, but at that time, maybe I just didn't click with me then, but because he shares it in his stories and whatnot. But yeah, he would probably be number one for me. I'm also was a big fan at the time of the legendary Abdullah the Butcher, who he and Bruiser Brody had, in my opinion, the greatest rivalry or feud ever, because I don't think of any other feud that's gone to as many different countries, many different mm-hmm. organizations, and shared as much blood as those two did over the course of time in the mid to late 80s until the unfortunate death of Bruiser Brody, which I hope they will one day revive and look into at some point in time, but I'll leave it at that. But yes, that would probably be two great ones there. Although I am not as an individual that's against the modern way of wrestling. I do like my share of, acrobatics. I do like my share of the lighter weight guys that can go ahead and show their wares. I just love having a good match, good intensity, a competition that I can see and understand, a storyline that's being told that is relatable to an audience. That's what I think I look for. I pop in with both organizations, and both organizations have their issues. I think any mm-hmm. modern wrestling fan can say that clearly. But, you know, there is hope. But I know that the wrestling industry as a whole is kind of in a lull. It's still searching for something, and it's searching for that next great person, that next great star. I mean, there is no – nobody can tell me right now there is no Steve Austin. There is no The Rock right now that's available. There is no Steve Austin. There is no Hulk Hogan. There is no some individual that can command – that type of audience right now. And the numbers reflect that. AEW doesn't get a million viewers every time out. They get close to 750, 850. WWE can barely get over 2 million on its Friday show and can't get to 2 million on its Monday show. And this is a program that used to get regularly 5 to 7 million people during mm-hmm. its heyday. So, I mean, right now it clearly tells you that they don't have that one or two marquee stars, and neither does the AEW. But AEW does have some signs going forward with some talent that hopefully they can nurture and grow, and that company has a bright future, I think, going forward. But again, I think the business as a whole, whether it's in Japan, Mexico, or here in the States, has that one charismatic individual, as you know, it sounds like from being a pro wrestling fan, knows that whether you love or hate that individual breeds so much charisma, you just can't avoid watching them.
Oh yeah, most
or
definitely.
Or her. Right. Well.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I'll share. You mentioned my favorite. I love Bruiser Brody. As a kid, I believed it hook, line, and sinker that this maniac was going to absolutely just destroy that person in the ring. Like I joke as a kid, I was like, I'm going to see a man die. Like in my head, every time I watched a match of his, I'm like, I felt uneasy, you know, because you're like, I think this guy's going to get jacked up and I shouldn't be watching this, but I'm watching, you know what I mean? Like that car accident type of feel, you know?
He always created havoc. Was he going to be doing a dropkick or doing some type of, let's say, a flip or tope or something like that? No. But he was going to go ahead and create havoc in every single match that he was in. And I think that's what happens. No matter if he was going ahead and having the 580-second straight countout with Abdullah Butcher, those two would go at it and they would go into the crowd and they would brawl with each other and blood would be flying and all these things as far as would be going on and wreaking havoc and chairs thrown and you know, a lot of hardcore stuff before even it was cool to be hardcore. I mean, we saw at that point in time that I think Bruiser Brody was ahead of his time, and it's unfortunately we lost him all too soon.
I agree. Well, Gerald, let's talk about social media, where folks can keep tabs on you, where they can find the Pop Culture Cosmos and all that fun stuff.
Best place to go is just type in Pop Culture Cosmos. If you are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Google Play, wherever as far as listening to podcasts, just type in Pop Culture Cosmos. It comes right up for you. PopCultureCosmos.com. If you want to go ahead and you're a basketball fan, Lakers Fast Break, easy enough right there. That anything comes up right there for you. And of course, for your fantasy football fans out there, Inside Sports Fantasy Football. But again, if you ever have a question on how to navigate through these, the best place to go is PopCultureCosmos.com. Right there, there's a link that's been posted right there that tells you every one of our shows that's related to us and where to find it, how to find it. And again, if you take the time to listen to any one of our shows or check out one of our videos on our Pop Culture Cosmos or Lakers Fast Break or Inside Sports Fantasy Football Facebook pages, we do a ton of stuff on Facebook Live. In fact, right now, I'm running a Dungeons & Dragons stream as we speak that a lot of great people are part of. So if you're interested in that, I do a lot of that as well. So check it out, Pop Culture Cosmos on Facebook, where I also post the latest pop culture news as well.
There you go. And I want to remind folks as well, IndiePodsUnited.com, or find the Facebook page for IndiePods United, and you can catch Gerald with Pop Culture Cosmos. And of course, he said he was doing a couple panels as well. I'll be there too. $10, that's a heck of a deal. Let's just be honest. If you've ever been curious about podcasting, this is the place to go, hands down. Well, not physically go, because we're doing it virtually, but you get what I mean. Yes.
I think that everybody else does out there. Believe me, it's supporting independent podcasters. And, you know, this guy right here works so hard at what he does. I try to work as hard as I can at what we do. And I was just kidding before we went on the show. We don't have the type of benefits that these other premier podcasts, so to speak, and I use that in quotations, the options that they get. We don't get rolled out the $1 million contracts right away. We have to earn every listener and viewer that we get. Do we like to, would we like to get it to that point where we're all up on that stature? I hope so. I hope we do. And in fact, a lot of, the great listening base that many of us have already, we're very appreciative of. But you're going to check out, if you go to it, you're going to see 40 to 50 great podcasts right there for you. You're going to check out some great panels. There's going to be comedians, musicians, entertainers. We're all gathered in one place. And again, these are the cutting edge of independent podcasts right there for you, that I think that you'll have at least 2, 3, 4 or more podcasts that you'll stick around with week in and week out after you check us out at IndiePods United.
Well, there you have it. Gerald, thank you very much for sitting down this evening and chatting with me. I really do appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it as well. And the red carpet is open for you, my friend. We got to go ahead and get you the hookup on our show, because I'd love to have you on for a segment talking about anything that you want to talk about in the realm of pop culture as well.
Oh, you got it. We'll definitely get that set up. In the meantime, don't go anywhere, folks, because I'll be right back right after these quick words. Before I get to my next conversation, I need to let you know about World's Greatest Comics. They're a great sponsor of the PVD cast, and they're also your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, tons of back issues, posters. They got it all. And if you want to make sure that you don't miss a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for their pull system, and you'll never, ever have that fear again. Once your favorite comic comes in, they'll hold it for you right at the register till you come in and pick it up. So check them out online at wgcomics.com, or find them on Facebook. Just look for @WGComics. Or better yet, if you're in the Central Ohio area, stop on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, on the PVD cast. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I have the pleasure of sitting down with a man that's a comedian, an entrepreneur, a podcaster, a social media guru. Man, you have a lot of titles, Jeff. Anyways, I'm talking about Jeff Dwoskin. Jeff, how you doing, man?
I'm good. And John, the pleasure is mine to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're quite welcome.
And thank you for reading my bio as I wrote it. It's always a nightmare when you sit down and you write a bio and then someone actually reads it out loud and you hear it out loud.
Funny you mention that. If there's one thing that I struggle with podcasting is writing up my summaries. Like, I do really well at, like, I'm sitting down with Jeff tonight. We're going to talk about this. And then there's always, like, I feel pressure to have, like, a cool, witty, like, closing sentence. And I sit behind my computer for like 20 minutes going, I don't know what to write, you know? And I read it out loud. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds awful. Never mind. Backspace, delete that last sentence. You know what I mean? That's my personal hangup.
Yeah. I have like a template now for those show notes. So I kind of just, I plug it in. And I think it's like, you have to hit the highlights, you know, I look at them as if someone else is reading this, is the right thing going to trigger them to read it? And it's not necessarily what the main thing of the podcast conversation may or may not be about. You know what I mean? So like I was talking to one guy and he had one credit that I knew everyone would know. We talked about it for 2 minutes, but I'm right. Blah, 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 his own, you know, blah. You know, really sold that. It worked, I think. But yeah, summarizing like 90 minutes, it's 90 minutes. We're going to be here for 17 hours, folks, and summarizing that. Yes. But summarizing like 30, 40 minutes into like three sentences, and then for Twitter, even less than that.
Oh,
yeah. It's hard.
It is very much so. So how long have you been podcasting?
I've only been podcasting since the end of May.
Okay.
So I'm kind of a newbie when it comes to podcasting. I just released episode 26 of the Jeff Dwoskin Show. And so I'm, you know, happy about that. It seems to be going a lot faster than I had thought. So that's nice, you know.
What do you mean by that? Like it's going faster. What do you mean?
I remember doing like episode one, and then I remember doing episode two, joking, we made it to episode two, that we beat the naysayers that said we'd never do it, you know, and then now it's like episode 26. To me, it was a huge milestone because the list of episodes now I have graduated to the next one in the drop down, right? It's like 5, 10, 25. Now I have to go to 50. I have to choose 50 to see all my episodes. So it's a big, you know, on one screen. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. No, I get it.
So it was like, that's a big milestone. You know, it's a one extra step I have to do now every time I want to see everything. But, you know, it's good. How long have you been doing it? You've been doing it for a while.
I've been doing it 7 years.
Yeah. Wow.
I started in 2012. And I totally get where you're coming from. Like, you sit there and go, I remember I was coming up on episode 100 and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to hit triple digits. Wow. I was kind of perplexed. I kind of was in this weird headspace where I didn't know like how to feel about it, but it's a great accomplishment to get. Look, and this is what I tell people, if you want to podcast, just do it. Like, don't overthink it. Just start doing it. Yeah. You're going to be awful. I have plenty of early episodes that are complete hot garbage. And I hope no one ever finds them. They're terrible. But, you know, just you can't wait for that perfect setup, I guess you could say, you know?
No, you're absolutely right. Like in my head, I always pictured, oh, people would start with the first one and just come with me on the journey. And then I realized, oh, people don't do that necessarily. They find you at some particular point and then they can go backwards. And I'm thinking, oh my God, if you go at this point, if you go backwards, I get worse. You know, I mean, it's like, what happened to Jeff? I was like, no, go the other way. Go the other way.
So then why did you start in May? Was it because of the pandemic or some other reason why you said, I'm going to start doing this?
Well, I originally bought everything and all my mic and my soundboard, and I had everything in like 2017. I was going to do a podcast back then that was based more on social media tips, part of the social media guru part of my bio that you read. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be called Viral Intentions. You know, sort of a play on the movie Cruel Intentions, and viral because, you know, you post something, you want it to go viral. And it just sat on my desk and you know, it's like finally my wife made me put it in a box. And you know, then when the pandemic hit and then we're all home in March, I pulled everything out and I said, all right, I think now I have time to do it, you know, because all of a sudden I wasn't driving to work. I had an extra 10 hours a week, right? And so I go to set it up, and I had the intro, the outro, I had everything all set up. And I'm like, oh, you know, and so now it's like March 2020. And I'm like, you know what? Probably not the best time to start a podcast called Viral Intentions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I changed it to the Jeff Jawoskin Show. And, you know, just then I kind of balanced it. I do some social media stuff just really quick. And then I do, you know, trends, social trends, and then, you know, talk to comedians, talk to actors, talk to, you know, different things, pop culture. And so I always wanted to do it. My brother does a few business related podcasts. And so he was doing it and he's like, you gotta do it. And so I just did it. I sat down one day and I just created 3 episodes because somebody told me you needed 3 episodes to be onto Apple Podcasts. So I'm like, all right, I'll launch with 3 episodes, you know? So I did the premiere, which is just me. And then I realized, oh, interviews are a good idea. And so I don't know if I had just stuck with me that we'd still be talking right now. But then I started doing the interviews, and yeah, suddenly like everyone's like, I found like everyone's willing to talk to you if you have a podcast. People like I worked with, I did comedy with, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Hey, you want to be in my podcast? Sure, I'll come hang with you, Jeff. And it's a nice conversation. But it would have been more awkward if I just called them and said, hey, remember me? No, I probably don't. I can't. I don't even have a reason to pretend I remember you. Yeah. It's like, okay.
The thing I made the joke about, this was back probably in May when I had a guest on, a filmmaker on, and we were joking about young ladies, the opposite sex. They sometimes, when you're like, legitimately, you want to talk to them. I have a podcast, or in his instance, I'm making a film. And it's like, you always have to preface it with, I swear to God, I'm not hitting on you. I actually do have a podcast. I'd love to have you on, you know?
I had mostly, maybe because of that, I had mostly guys on, and then my daughters are like, you don't interview any women. So like last month was all women. It just turned out that way. But you know, it's just trying to give my girls something to listen to as well. But it's weird, you know, and then some people don't even respond. I reached out to one guy who was like a comedian, and I said, hey, do you want to be on my podcast? And he responded, let me check my calendar. Which you might as well just say, no, thanks. You know, nobody says, let me check my calendar as the buffer with any intention of ever getting back to you.
You know, so that was my pet peeve is always people that jerk you around. I don't mind if you just say, hey, no, thank you. I'm not interested. I hate, and I've had a couple instances where somebody goes, oh, yeah, I can do it next Thursday. And then you like, send your reminder email with your connect information on Wednesday. And they're like, oh, sorry. Can I do this 2 Saturdays from now? Okay. You know what? Okay, cool. Then you contact them again. And then it's like some other rigmarole about you got to do this or that. And it's like, yeah, you know what? No, just if you're not interested, just say no, thank you. I'm cool with that. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, exactly. I've only had a few people say no. I've had some people not respond, which is fine. And I'll probably follow up at some point because, frankly, I have so many already taped. I'm not in a rush to get, you know, I mean, if somebody doesn't respond, I'm not going to hock them, you know, and over again. I can pace that out a little bit. And a couple of people said no. They're like, oh, I've been on a few podcasts now, maybe in January. I'm like, all right, I'll buzz you in January. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Takes the pressure off me for having to fit you in now.
But, yeah.
You know.
You have a favorite episode you've already done?
A favorite episode that I've already done? Yeah, you know, I like the Jackie the Joke Man episode. My personal favorite was... Maybe Bruce Valanche, just because like I really enjoyed talking to him. You know what I mean? Like,
Bruce is awesome. I had a blast when he came on the PVD cast. He was just so genuine and so funny. And just I loved his emails. His email responses were hilarious.
Yes, yes. And I actually like some, you know, some of the folks I have to learn who they are, you know what I mean? Or I kind of know who they are. Bruce Valanche, I knew who he was. You know what I mean? Like he was a big deal to me. So like when I, you know, without even having to do any research. I mean, I still dove. Like, I had literally just watched the Paul Lynn Halloween special, completely unrelated to me even knowing I was going to talk to him. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing. Like, so it was like, so that one to me was like really, really cool because, you know, it meant something to me. I really wanted it. I loved the ability, the fact that I got to talk to him. My wife was really excited when I talked to Larry Hankin because she's a huge Friends fan and loves, you know, Mr. Heckles and all that kind of stuff. So she thought that was really cool. And he called me after the interview was over and I put my wife on the phone and they talked for a minute. And so she really geeked out over that. So that was kind of cool as well.
Cool. Do you have a dream guest? Like if you could ever, no matter the obstacles, you could clear all those hurdles and you could have anyone you would want. Oh, who would it be?
That's a great question. I think I'd love to talk to Steve Martin or Tom Hanks. Steven Spielberg. It would be Steven Spielberg would be the one. That's if I only had one person, that's who it would be. But I also would love to talk to Henry Winkler. And so those four. Those would be good. Any one of those would be great.
Okay, gotcha. Tom Hanks, Steve Martin, Steven Spielberg, or Henry Winkler.
I'm putting Spielberg at the top of that list. That was just like thinking of people like, oh, that would be really, really, that I really would love to talk to. And then, I think Spielberg, and then second to that would be Henry Winkler. But I would take Henry Winkler if Spielberg wasn't available. But any one of those four, I think, would be great. I feel like Steve Martin might be a little... I don't know how open he would be to talking. You know, he's the kind of guy that gives, you know, pre-signed autographs and stuff like that. So I don't get the impression he's a talker.
Wait a minute, he gives pre-signed autographs?
He has like cards signed up, and like that says it says something like you had the pleasure of meeting Steve Martin, and it's signed or something like that. It's some funny thing like. That he does. Yeah. Henry Winkler, I feel like, is the kind of guy. Henry Winkler is the kind of guy who I like to talk to because I like when I go, oh, tell me about Pinky Tuscadero. And then he'll talk for 10 minutes. Like those are the kind of guests that I love. I love like when they just start sharing anything freestyle off the top of their heads and going with that. That's, I like to think, like someone said to me, like, you don't talk much for an interviewer. I'm like, I look at my job as I'm a listener.
Yes. Look, I will tell you straight up, that's one of my pet peeves of listening to other podcasts is I feel like the host should do 20% of the talking. The guest should do 80% of the talking.
That's how I feel too. Like, this is to me, like, this is what annoys me if I'm listening to a podcast. Say you're Henry Winkler. I go, oh, so I was reading that you were born in Brooklyn and then your father was this and then you did this and then you guys moved there and then you did that and then you did this and then you auditioned for this. And is that right? Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, you know what? I want to hear him say it. I don't want to hear the host say it. You know what I mean? It's to me, it's like, to me, that's a whole, you do the research. So you don't have to say it. So just so you can kind of bubble it up when you, and kind of let the guests know, you know, what's going on or you're familiar, you know, when they're talking about something. But yeah, we're on the same page here.
Oh yeah, most definitely. That there's nothing worse than that is just hearing somebody go on. And it's like, why do you even have why do you have a guest if you're just going to talk the whole time? Totally.
Right. It's like, that's the guy like in school is really into his own book reports. It's like,
for listeners at home, if you don't know what a book report is, Google it. All right. Cause you know, anyways, so what do you think maybe, is the biggest like fallacy you think with podcasting?
That people are ready to listen. I maybe have a better grasp of this for 7 years, but I feel podcasting, I feel it's got to be confusing for people who don't do podcasting, like for listening. There's some people who are hardcore, like there's always the people that do CrossFit, right? I mean, like And there's those people like, oh, yeah, I listen to podcasts. I listen to all I listen to is podcasts. And those people get it. They're the hardcores. They're the early adopters. But when you talk to someone like I was listening and someone on my Instagram was like, as soon as I figure out how to figure this out, Jeff, I'm going to listen. I'm like, figure it out. Either go to the website, click play, you know, but it's like it's confusing, right? Go to Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify. You can go to Amazon Music. The fact that it's available everywhere, I think, is actually more confusing for people because then people have to commit to a platform. And then does it work on their phone, right? And then, which platform do you push as a podcaster? If I push Apple and then half the people have Android, you know, then do I have to push Spotify? Well, you know what I mean? So it's a whole confusing thing. And our whole game is to get people to listen. And I think it's hard for people to listen.
I agree. I still think we're still podcasting has been around now for quite a while, but I still think we're in the infancy because I agree with you, Jeff. I think that the average Joe on the street that is not podcast savvy or not even tech savvy has no idea. You know, how to find it, how to play it, how to share it. I think I think it's still in its infancy.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. It just feels difficult. Like everyone has one. So
Another reason why I think you have to preface, I am not hitting on you, miss. I really do.
And then the other thing is like, unless you, now the big deal for like Apple and stuff like that, when they promote the celebrities. Well, guess what? The celebrities don't need you to promote them. Yes, that looks good on your ad. Oh, you know, Michelle Obama or Hillary Clinton, you know, or Joe Rogan's now on Spotify. It's us little people it's the voices that are unheard that need, you know, that kind of support. Joe Rogan or David Dobrik or any of those people don't need it. They just post one thing and their 15 million followers will somehow transfer over. You know, so they're making it seem like it's an elitist type thing. And like, we're just all these scrappy people trying to kind of nip at their heels or something. So it's, and they're probably, and all these celebrities are probably only doing it because they can't work. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so then there's going to be a graveyard of podcasts, you know, hopefully soon when people can go back to work, but like, you know, because they're not going to have time to do their podcast when they're on a movie set and all, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's just not going to be that interesting to them. Mm-hmm. Should I make $5 million on this movie or put out this week's episode? Well, didn't we get that free Audacity promo we can throw in?
Well, Jeff, let's talk a little bit about your time as a comedian. So how did you get into comedy? How did you start doing comedy?
I had a web company in the late 90s, and one of our clients was Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. It's one of the big Midwest comedy clubs. And when we were doing that website, one of the web pages was all about comedy classes. Oh, you can take a comedy class and, you know, graduate and learn how to be a stand-up. So then flash forward a few years from that, and I'm working at this other company, Quest Communications. And I was like the guy that, like, when I would present, I was just funny because I didn't care. You know what I mean? It was like, it's not that I didn't care. I mean, I wasn't worried about getting fired or anything like that. I wasn't rude or anything, but I was just funny. I was able to see the humor in the workplace. And, you know, when we'd have all hands meetings, I'd be the funny guy and do that kind of thing. And at some point somebody said, oh, you should do stand up. And I'm like, oh, and then I remembered, oh, wait, the website, they have classes. And so I signed up and I took the classes. Comedy classes are great. They don't teach you how to be funny. I think you have to be funny, but it does teach you how to write. You know, you need to know how to be up there, and then you can adapt your own style once I think you learn the basics. But, you know, that's what I did. So I took this class and I don't remember, maybe it was a couple months. And, you know, then we had this graduation. I did the graduation and, you know, that was like 18 years ago. So I never stopped. I mean, with COVID, I stopped, but and I'm not sure I'm going to go back at this point. I might just be a full-time podcaster now. I'm not ready to go back into clubs and breathe on microphones that someone else breathed on and stuff like that.
Yeah, true, true.
Yeah, so that's kind of how it was. You know, I just started. I did open mics 4 or 5 times a week. You know, we happen to have a lot of clubs here. We weren't in New York where you could do it 4 or 5 times a day, but I was fortunate in Michigan. They had a lot of clubs, most of which are all closed or gone now for a long time. But when I started, they were there. And so, you know, just, you know, built up a set and kept working and working, eventually became a headliner. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. It's a lot of time away from your family and all that kind of stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, I wasn't sure that I was going to become super famous or anything like that. So, you know, I was contemplating what to do with it. And when COVID hit, I was kind of like, you know what? I like doing nothing.
If you don't mind, like on a show day, can you like walk us through what a show day is for a stand-up comedian?
Sure. So for me, it was different. In the beginning, it would be obsessing over my sets and what I was going to do. And, you know, if you had 15 minutes, you know, in the beginning, you're methodically writing down your sets and matching up the time to the time you're going to be given. Because, you know, that when you have a minute bit, it takes a minute, right? And later, though, what I mean by that is you start to expand it. You start to, you know, when you get comfortable with the crowd, you know, suddenly your material can kind of grow. You know, you add bits to it, stuff like that. But it would just be obsessing. I would start on if I was doing a Thursday, I'd start on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You know, I'd start on Monday and I just would practice nonstop. And then as the years went on, I'd be like, how much time? And then just walk out there and kind of just do it. And then when I'm done, I'm done. The key to being able to being done when you're done is not having to worry about if you don't get that huge last laugh, you still have to get off the stage. You know, so just being comfortable with the time and just being, because really when you're doing comedy, it's all about the time. Whatever time you're given, that's what you got to do. If you're given 15 minutes, you do 15 minutes. You don't do 13, you don't do 15 in 10 seconds. You know, you do 15 or 30 or 45, whatever it is. And so, you know, that would be that. And like on a weekend, which is one of the reasons I don't miss it too much, you know, like on a Friday or Saturday, it would be, you know, kind of just, I'd be in my head the whole day, you know, so it wasn't really good to be around, not like in a bad mood, but I just, you know, I was just kind of focused and zoned, and I had to eat early because I couldn't eat too close to the show or my stomach would go crazy. And I could eat like after a first show, but so I couldn't eat. So I'd eat like around 3 or 4, you know, for an 8 o'clock show. And then, you know, the best shows were the ones where like other comedians that you knew were there, and you could kind of bullshit around with them and fuck around with them and have a good time, and then kind of step on stage and kind of channel that, you know, into the act and the synergy that you're going to have with the audience. And then, you know, then it's over, you know? So it's, it's a lot of like prep time, you know? It's like when you take a whole weekend and like, if you're a feature and you're only doing, you know, 15 or 30 minutes 4 times, and you're only on stage for total 2 hours, but like, you know, for those Friday to Saturday, it takes up all your time, especially if you're not in your own city. It's like you're in a hotel room, you're doing nothing, you know. It's kind of, it wasn't as exciting as a life that I would have wanted. I didn't get as much out of that as maybe some other people did. So, you know, it was kind of a natural progression as it kind of just faded away into COVID.
Obviously, you have to have some favorite comedians that inspired you or that you look up to. Who are those comedians?
My early on comedian, I loved Gary Shandling. I loved Dennis Miller. I'm talking about 1980s Dennis Miller. And I liked Steve Martin. I liked Rodney Dangerfield. We listened to a lot of Joan Rivers in our house because my mom loved Joan Rivers. Those were some of like the Bill Cosby, the, you know, decades before the issues, folks. Well, maybe the issues were going on, but decades before we knew about it. you know, so those were kind of the ones that I would listen to. I think Dennis Miller, early Dennis Miller, Dennis Miller Saturday Night Live were some of the ones that I think shaped me the most. Like I always looked at that type of, I liked the smart humor, though I wasn't like Dennis Miller, but I remember like one of my very first things I ever did was when I was working at a camp and there was a talent show and I wrote my own Dennis Miller skits, you know, based on things that were happening at camp. But it was like, I was Dennis Miller and I did a whole Saturday Night Live news thing. And that was like one of my earliest comedy things that I like did on stage, you know, before I even thought about being a comedian and stuff like that. But like, that was like how I would pattern the jokes or my writing style, I felt, you know, matched that kind of cadence or beats. And so that's who I kind of look to.
All right. Well, let's switch to the guru for a minute. How did you get involved in focusing on and studying social media?
So when I was doing the comedy stuff and I would post a lot on Facebook, and on Facebook, I would, you know, you'd be funny. You know, and people would say, oh, you're so funny. I'm like, thanks. You know, but at one point somebody said to me, he said, Jeff, you should be on Twitter, because on Twitter, people will actually notice you. It's not like you're talking to just the people you know. And so I said, oh. So I got on Twitter and I started building up my audience on Twitter. And, you know, I realized on Twitter, it's different than Facebook in the sense that on Facebook, it's kind of a closed group. It's whoever follows you. And on Twitter, when you talk about certain things, you know, you're much more noticeable. It's open to the world, right? It's not closed off. So, you know, it wasn't long before, you know, people, you know, I was getting a lot of attention, and then I would be published in publications, you know, BuzzFeed puts my tweets in a lot. I was been read on Good Morning America, the Today Show, you know, every magazine or anything you can think of that's published tweets. At some point, I'd probably been in one of them. It's a laundry list. And so I was like, oh, this is way cool than Facebook. And so, so I just kept kind of building it up. And one of the things that I kind of got hooked on were these things called hashtag games. It's like hashtag premises that, you know, like hashtag social media lessons or hashtag marriage in four words or, you know, make a movie vegan, you know, that kind of mad games on Twitter. And so I started playing those and kind of got obsessed with those. And then I built an app. We have a site called hashtag Roundup, and I built an app called hashtag Roundup. And it's been going now for like 5 years. And so like every like hour, 90 minutes throughout every day, we put out an original hashtag challenge. It's sort of, you know, in the comedy world, they call it a premise. It's here's a new premise, and people could tweet to it. And the cool thing about that is like you can tweet. When you tweet with a hashtag, the hashtag itself has much wider reach than just you tweeting. So you may only have 100 followers, but when you tweet with a hashtag, people are clicking on that hashtag. And so like anyone who uses the hashtag shows up. So it's a great way to kind of build your whole network and get to know other like-minded people that are tweeting about the same kind of things. And so I just kind of did that nonstop and kind of built a whole company hashtag Roundup around it. And, you know, so like yesterday, one of the hashtags was like number one in Canada, top, you know, 10 in the US, and Michael McKean played, and Hal Sparks and Clint Black. Anyways, yeah, a lot of verified, you know, people, they just kind of jump in. And so it's pretty cool. You know, it's kind of neat that, oh, we started this. And then those hashtags many times get picked up, you know, in publications, and they'll do articles on our hashtags. And, you know, so it's pretty cool. It's kind of addicting. When I consider myself a social media guru, I consider myself really good at orchestrating things that create large engagement on social media. So okay. I think that I'm really good at, my team's really good at creating concepts that get viral or, you know, get a lot of people engaged. And I think that's what a lot of people kind of miss. They think they're getting engagement, but you know, there's those pieces that are missing to really kind of get the whole generic crowd involved. It kind of stems back to the whole comedy. When you're doing comedy, you're standing on a stage and you have to get a bunch of strangers, you know, on board with what you're talking about and get them to react, laugh. And so it's same concepts on Twitter. When you're doing like these hashtag games, you're setting up a premise that when someone looks at that, they know how to respond to it. If you see the hashtag The Walking Dead, you don't know how to respond to it if you're not watching the show or if you're not a fan of the show. It's a very specific niche thing. But, you know, marriage in four words, or even if you're married or not married, your parents were married, you know, there's things that you can do to contribute to that concept in your own point of view. And so, you know, those are the types of things we do, you know, every day, all the time. Sometimes they get a little political, but hopefully that'll slow down after.
Have you voted already?
Oh, I voted and we dropped it off. That was the best part about it. Hey, we're going to screw up the mail. So, you know, we can't trust the mail. And then everyone's like, all right, well, how about we just campaign and tell everyone to drop it off? Okay. So it's like, you don't see anything as mail in your mail in vote. It's like, get your mail in vote and then drop it off. Don't use the mail. You know, so, you know, that was an easy one to get around. So that was good. So yeah, I'm interested. I'm trying not to think about it, but it's like, but yeah, I'm interested to see what's going to happen. So
it's going to be a wild ride, my friend, a wild ride.
Yes. Yes.
all right. So I see you're wearing a Tigers hat. Obviously you got to be a Tigers fan.
I'm a fan of the Tigers, but if we're going to get into a sports conversation, I'm just going to nod.
Okay. I was going to ask, are you a big fan of the Tigers?
I'm a fan of the Tigers. I'm wearing a Tiger shirt and a Tiger hat, but like, I'm a big supporter. As they say in the movie Grease, if you can't be an athlete, be an athletic supporter. You know.
Nice. Okay. Yes. All right. Well, there goes all my sports questions.
Sorry to disappoint, but it makes my wife really happy that I'm not into sports and I don't spend Sundays watching football. That's right, ladies. We exist.
Well, Jeff, one quick thing to talk about here before I let you go. You know, coming up here November 29th through December 3rd, the Indie Pods United Summit. We talked off air. You have a spot on the show. Are you looking forward to it?
Oh my God, am I looking forward to it? Yes. Tina and that crew have been working so hard. It's going to be really cool to be a part of it. You know, the inaugural Indie Pods.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Then maybe we'll find out what we're independent from, but maybe it means a collection of independent.
I think so.
Yeah.
We don't have Clear Channel or iHeartRadio behind us. That's so, right. You know.
We are independent. Come listen to your favorite podcasters.
There you go. So, Jeff, do you have a website, social media, any upcoming projects you'd like to plug real quick? Any cool guests coming up on the Jeff Dwoskin show?
Yeah, I got Billy Van Zant's coming up. I got Jackie the Joke Man's coming back. So those should be pretty cool. Comedian Bob Zaney coming up. So that'll be fun.
Oh, I haven't thought of that gentleman in years.
I know. He's so cool. And like, so that'll be good. And then, yeah, I mean, my website is jeffdwoskinshow.com. But if you can't spell that, jeffisfunny.com will get you to the same place. On Twitter or Instagram, it's at Jeff Dwoskin Show. So yeah, that's it. You know, hit me up. If you listen to all my episodes, there's a hidden message. But you have to start from one and listen all the way through to episode 26. And there's a hidden message. And if you
is this like back in the 80s with Judas Priest? If you played the song backwards,
that's right. And sometimes it helps if you listen to every episode two or three times.
Ha 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 ha. I mean, hey, folks, just listen to them two or three times because who knows what's going to happen. It's 2020. You know, we still have a few more months. Cthulhu could come. You don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. Listen and subscribe to my podcast and 5-star reviews. Listen and subscribe if you haven't already to the PVD cast. Give them 5 stars too, just for having me. And like, there you go. Support your podcast, folks. Support.
I like how you think, Jeff. I like how you think.
Of course. Thanks for having me, man.
You're quite welcome. You're quite welcome. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a quick break and then I will talk at you on the other side of the break. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversations with Gerald Glassford and Jeff Dwoskin talking about podcasting. And I hope you check out the Indie Pods United Summit next week, November 29th through December 3rd. And check out Jeff and check out Gerald's podcast as well. As you heard, Gerald's got a couple different ones that he works on. They're hardworking dudes and they deserve some good listeners. So check them out. All right. At this time, I need to let you know if you have any questions or concerns, you can get in touch with me a bunch of different ways. First, you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is at PVDMVP. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook and Instagram pages of this podcast. Just search for at PVDcast. And you can shoot me an email if you want, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. And speaking of pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, that's one of many different ways where you can get this podcast. You can also find it through all those major outlets like, you know, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Audible, etc., etc. Just go to your favorite podcast platform, put in the search bar, the PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, John Orlando, and you're sure to find it. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And of course, subscribing helps you never miss an episode. And if you do miss an episode, you can always catch me every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page of the PVDcast doing a live broadcast. It's so much fun. You definitely need to check it out. And with that, I'm going to thank each and every one of you for listening. I really do appreciate it. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC. Copyright 2020.